This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. On today's arts edition of the program, we talk with two internationally renowned artists who reside right here in Southwest Florida. Later this hour, we'll be joined in studio by Expressionist Impressionist painter Leoma Lovegrove. Aside from the visitors who flock to the Lovegrove Gallery and Gardens each year and Matt Lachey, her work has been widely distributed through her partnership with Bell's Department Stores. We'll explore her latest collection of paintings inspired by Hurricane Irma, proceeds of which are all going to help recovery. We'll also find out about her ambitious schedule events, including Indie Author Day coming up this weekend. Her My Studio painting demonstration set to take place at the Broadway Palm Dinner Theater early next year, and a special trip to her hometown in Indiana later this month. But before we delve into the vibrant colors of Leoma Lovegrove's work, we start perhaps at the opposite end of the spectrum with the stunning black-and-white nature photography of Clyde Butcher. Butcher has been hiking deep into the Big Cypress National Preserve, the Western Everglades, and other natural Florida locations for more than 30 years, capturing his iconic photographs of our region's pristine wild spaces. Butcher hit a roadblock in early May when he suffered a stroke to the left side of his brain. We'll get an update on his continued recovery and plans to get back out into the swamps. We'll also explore Butcher's upcoming events, including the annual Fall Festival at the Artists' Everglades Gallery later this month, lectures, and a preview of new works and darkroom tours at Butcher's Venice Gallery. Clyde Butcher, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. It's great to speak with you again.
Well, thanks for having me back. You know, I'm still putting.
All right. I invite listeners to join the conversation as well. Phone lines are open. Call 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. We're on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. You can leave your comments and questions there, or on Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And Clyde, first of all, tell us a bit about how you're doing. The last time you and I had spoke in June, you were home from inpatient rehabilitation, walking around with a walker. Tell us about your recovery over the last several months since we talked last.
Well, I've been doing a lot of PT, which is, you know, exercise from instructors of how to get my balance back and my core back. I've been doing a lot of actually photography with my walker.
Okay, so still walking with the walker at this point, but that
Go
ahead.
I also use the cane, and I can walk about 10 or 15 feet without a cane. So things are progressing, but the walker has been a great help in my photography. But unfortunately, I have to go on semi accessible, situations. I've taken the walker into the swamp, but it's a little difficult having to carry it over logs and such. that's been kind of a bugger. But no, I've been actually doing some really good photography. I can do probably about a mile. I can probably negotiate about a mile in a day, but I find a spot and I can use my walker. I sit down the walker, set my tripod up and the camera. And what's great about the walker, I can sit there and wait for the light. It's really, I think I want to keep it after I get well.
All right. Well, I imagine that the folks in your PT might not, instructing your physical therapy might not be too pleased with you taking it out into the swamp and carrying it over logs. That's probably, saying, that's not what this is for.
they're a little nervous about that, yeah.
Well,
but getting out in the wild and getting out in nature with quiet, it's basically a very healing situation. So it's not something I shouldn't be doing, because I think it's really good for me to get out there, and it gives me an incentive to go with the walker, because with a stroke you get tired awfully quick.
Mm-hmm.
And but when I have, there's a picture up ahead. I gotta get there, So it gives me an incentive to go further.
Well, tell me about some of the places that you have been able to go and photograph that are maybe a little more accessible than, where you've been known to go in the past. Right. Wading through waist deep water, miles from anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've been doing a lot in my Aca, which is really close to Venice. They have I've been out in the swamps there. Highlands Hammock has got a really neat boardwalk. It's about half a mile, three quarters of a mile long, which has a lot of neat stuff for the photograph. I've done a lot there. I was up at Cedar Key and did some work there. Actually, one of the things I putted down, there was a really good shot from a bridge, so I had to take my walker across the bridge and sit in the middle of the traffic kind of and take pictures. I've done actually a little bit down at the swamp. I've got one nice picture down there. So, you know, it's just taking time. My big goal right now, hopefully, I'm not sure how long it's going to be, is to be able to get in and out of the canoe.
Oh, right.
That would be that's one of my big goals now. I mean, going out in the swamp, walking over cypress knees and rocks and such is probably going to be another 6 months before I can do that. But if I can get in and out of the canoe, that'll open my territory a lot. I can photograph.
And back when we had spoken in June, you had talked about, you know, having these moments where you'll just be sitting somewhere feeling perfectly normal, and then until you try to go do something, and then you get that weird feeling of not exactly having total control of your movements, like just sort of coming back and almost like a rude shock. Is that something that's still occurring?
It's still occurring. It's better, but I get really upset sometimes about I want to do something and, oh, I just can't quite do it, you know. So it's but it's an incentive to keep working at it, though.
Well, I know that you've been known to say in your approach to photography that patience and persistence are important. Is that something that you kind of take into, I guess, your approach towards recovery as well? I imagine patience in that might be a little bit more difficult to muster than when you're waiting for that perfect photograph.
Well, you know, that's exactly what I'm doing now. I'm having patience and persistence, and the physical therapists say I'm getting better.
Excellent.
So, I'm working at it, and she said today I did a little better today than I did the other day. So, you know, it seems like I'm making a little. It's hard to tell myself if I'm making progress or not.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess somebody else can, because they're not so upset that I am about my situation. I mean, a stroke is really weird. I mean, you can't really explain it unless you've had a stroke. Like my right leg, it feels like it's got a magnet to the ground.
Hmm.
It goes shoo into the ground. You know, I mean, it's like it's sucked into the ground.
Oh. Well, and go ahead. I'm sorry.
So that's what's really frustrating, is that not being able to do the things I've been doing, and because I've been out photographing since, you know, out in, seriously, since 1960, you know, so that's what, 57 years? Whew.
Wow.
And all of a sudden you can't do it. That's kind of might get you a little upset. But I just keep plugging at it.
Well, we did get a comment from a caller, George from Naples. He wasn't able to stay on the line, but wanted us to pass along to you what a big fan of your work he is, and how happy he is that you've been able to make accommodations to continue working after the stroke. So, George, thank you so much for your comments. And I know we can just add those to this huge flood of support you got from all over the world.
Oh, really? It was really neat. From every politicians, people, environmentalists, governors, senators, I've had a lot of support. But it's really interesting, though. I've done a lot of good photography that I'm not sure I would have done otherwise. You know, I mean, I've really done some nice stuff. I'm really happy with what I've been doing, which is exciting, making progress.
Excellent. I know at your Venice Gallery coming up, I believe next month, there's actually going to be an open house with some new works. Is this going to include some recent works of yours?
Oh, yeah, I hope so. I mean, I'm sure we'll have some in here. I mean, I've got some nice stuff, I want, like I say, from Cedar Key and Myakka and Highlands Hammock and Miller's, Devil's Miller Hopper, so it's called, up in Gainesville. I mean, I've got a lot of nice new stuff, so hopefully, I'm sure we'll get a lot of it up before that show.
Have you had a chance to get out and photograph since Hurricane Irma passed through? And tell us, please.
Oh God, I was completely upset.
Yeah,
we took off. I guess it was last weekend, or weekend before last, and we went up 27. And the trees and all the landscape is just unhappy. All I can say is it was really frustrating. I mean, I didn't see anything to photograph. It was just like some of the palm trees were like weeping willows, and a lot of the oak trees and trees with leaves lost half their leaves, and just was very frustrating not being able to take a photograph. So I guess we're going to have to limit ourselves to the west on coastal stuff. I'm going to start try to do some work on the little beach here in Venice, south of Venice. I can't remember the name of it. Casperson Beach.
Okay.
There's an actual boardwalk there, and it looks like the landscape isn't too bad, so hopefully get some shots there.
I'm wondering, in your approach, do you feel kind of a need or maybe even an obligation to make sure that the photographs you put out there are really kind of showing our area's pristine wild spaces, perhaps in their best light? And I mean that metaphorically, not literally, as opposed to, you know, photographs that might maybe more overtly show the destruction of a storm.
Yeah, I'm... A lot of people have wanted me to show the destruction that's happening around the world, and we see enough of that on television.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to bring people's lives up happier and seeing a beautiful image that you know that they can relate to. That's, oh, isn't that beautiful? I wish I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm trying to do, is get people into the photographs to feel like they can feel part of our landscape, because there's so much a disconnect now from the city, urban life, and then into the wilderness. And people don't realize that life comes from the environment. It doesn't come from the city. You can't milk oxygen from a cow.
Right.
You have to have trees and grass, and you have to have clean water. And all these things everybody just takes for granted. That we have. And I think after this hurricane, I think people realize, oh, golly, you know, we're relying on nature staying nice to us, and nature doesn't care who we are. I mean, if we misuse the earth, which we, I think, are doing with this global warming, and nature's going to do its thing. It's going to, you know... The world is not in problems. We are in problems. So, so I like to show the best parts of the world, not the worst parts.
Right. Well, in that spirit, I wanted to ask about why you've kind of chosen, and for so many years now, to stay with black and white photography in particular, because I know that you are someone like me in the sense that you've lived here a long time, but you weren't exactly a Florida native. And I know one of the things that still strikes me are the crazy vibrant colors you can find in nature out here. But you've really kind of taken that out of the equation.
Well, that's the problem. And it's too vibrant, so you don't see the picture.
Oh, okay.
If you've ever took pictures in the Peckahatchee, it's just so green, it's almost sickening.
Mm.
You know, I mean, you don't see the landscape. You don't see the textures. All you see is this color. And so black and white is an interpretation of nature, so you can put your own color in. You don't have to rely on what's there, because... What's more important, air, water? Do you want to breathe, you want to drink. Everything has the same nature, usually, I think, has the same importance because everything is interrelated. So black and white makes a oneness with nature, and it all meshes together so that it's a oneness. And that's what nature is. It's a oneness. It's been millions of years figuring itself out, and I want to let people think see it as a one, not as a part. If you have a blue sky, people see, oh, look at that blue sky, and they don't see the grass. They don't feel the grass, or they see the grass, they don't feel the sky, or vice versa. So I think black and white really brings more interest to the photographs than color. I mean, my wife does the hand coloring, which I think is kind of interesting because it's not real. So I think that's kind of interesting, where she's interpreting what she thinks it should look like. It's like a painter is interpreting what they see. There's hardly any painters that actually can paint exactly realistic. They might think it's realistic. So a painter is interpreting what they see, and it's not like a color photograph, which is just a reproduction of nature, a Xerox copy of nature.
Well, you know, for folks who are unfamiliar with, you know, your approach and your process, I was hoping you could tell us maybe a little bit about, you know, equipment that you've used in the past. You know, I know some of your negatives are bigger than other artists' whole, you know, image in the end, at the end of the day. And, you know, sometimes an exposure can take, you know, several minutes to capture.
I have exposures that are at least 10 minutes. A typical exposure in a forest is 2 to 6 minutes.
Wow.
Because with a large format camera, you have to stop down the lens to get everything in focus because their focal lengths are much longer. Like a 110-degree angle lens on my 12 by 20 is 210 millimeters. And you think about 210 millimeters on your camera, 35-millimeter camera, how do you get everything in focus? A 210-millimeter camera, you know, a lens to get everything focused from 3 feet to infinity. So you have to stop down so you get that depth of field. I mean, stopping down, the exposures get longer. And then when you have, because in the forest you have you can't have direct light because it just makes it blotchy. You have whites and blacks. You have to have overcast. So that reduces the exposure. And then with film, you have a thing that's called reciprocity failure, which, in other words, the film is designed for a certain ASA, but as the exposures get longer, the ASA drops. So you might be having a film that's 100 ASA, but you may be shooting at 10 ASA because of the failure in the film because of the long exposures. I don't think nature was intended to be shot with a large format camera. It's very difficult.
Well, can you maybe tell us maybe a bit more about the patience involved here too? I mean, you know, we're talking about, you know, exposures of up to 10 minutes, but I know sometimes you've waited hours, days, or even longer, to get
years.
You know, years.
I have one shot called Cigar Orchid Pond. I started in 2000. It's behind the gallery, about a two-hour swamp walk. And I shot it for every year. In 2009, I finally got what I thought was a good shot out of 9 years of going back and forth to that shot.
Wow.
the plants wouldn't be right. The sun wouldn't be right. Too much wind. It was too little water, too much water, you know, so... Yeah, it's a lot of, I guess, patience to get what you think that shot should be.
Right.
And then typically sometimes, like the dune shot that I shot, I was there every day from sun up to sundown for 5 days, and the fifth day I finally got the shot. I shot two sheets of film in 5 days.
How do you know when you have it?
Oh, you just know. Yeah. Yeah. After enough. Well, put it this way, you hope you know.
Right.
Like in 2006, I had a 3 month trip around the country photographing for this national park book that I did. And I shot 1,700 sheets of film. And it took me 2 months to process it. So I didn't actually see my first picture for 6 months. So I didn't know I had anything for 6 months.
Oh, wow.
So it could get a little little nervousing, too, if you know what I mean. It was kind of scary. But you're doing it enough times, you pretty well get an idea that you're doing it right. You know, I think after all, that 1,700 sheets of film was $24,000 in film.
Wow.
It's a little different than digital.
Yeah. Well, and I understand that, you know, a little bit before the stroke, you had just gotten a new camera, so that had to be additionally frustrating. Have you had much of an opportunity?
3 days before the stroke, I got four by five, because I wanted to have something I could backpack a little easier with, mm-hmm. I'm getting older. And got lenses for it, got all the equipment and everything, got my found my filters, and then 3 days I had my stroke, so I've looked at it. Problem is my right hand, it's not coordinated too well, so it's hard, I don't know if I can put the film in the film holders. And processing the film, you know, it's going to be very difficult. So hopefully, and I'm hoping by next summer that I can get back shooting film again. And so, but it's really been exciting to be able to use a digital camera and be able to work and not just sit home and get pissed off.
Yeah, yeah. How do you feel about digital?
I'm really enjoying it. It's not as easy. Sometimes I think film is easier. It's the midtones and the gradations are not as easy as in film. You really have to know what you're doing in a digital darkroom. I've got images I've worked on for a couple weeks before I got a good print out of it. So it's not as easy as you think it is. I mean, if you can do bad stuff really quickly.
All right, I'm with you there. I can do that. well, I wanted to take a look also at, you know, despite everything that you're overcoming now, you're maintaining a pretty ambitious schedule of events.
Oh, yeah.
The annual Fall Festival at your Everglades Gallery is coming up later this month.
That's going to be a riot. We're going to the Rangers are doing the swamp walks, plus some volunteers. And I think it's going to be a huge crowd. I'm not sure how we're going to handle it. But we do this so people can get an eye attached to the Everglades and the Big Cypress.
Yeah, tell folks what the swamp walks are all about.
Right. It's basically to get people connected. I gave a reporter from NBC, Good Morning America, NBC? Good morning, something like that.
I'm always on the news myself that time of day, so I never see it.
Well, anyhow, this was many years ago. But he had done 7 or 8 different shows on the Everglades. But when he came work with me, I made him get into the swamp. I needed to walk, and he said that was the first time he was connected. That when he was in an airboat or swamp buggy, he says, yeah, you see it, but you're not connected. And to walk in the swamp and feel the swamp, and it really is an important way of getting connected with the environment. And you have to do that to get connected.
And of course, you know, images of you, you know, wading through that waist-deep water out in the swamps all by your. I mean, that's almost like an iconic image in my mind. Thinking about you out there doing that work as well.
It's gorgeous, though. It's gorgeous, and the water is crystal clear. It's not like working in New Jersey swamp, you know.
Right. Right.
It's in the summertime when it's raining. It's actually clean enough you can actually drink out of the swamp. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing.
I wonder if in all the years you've been out doing that work, and I know a lot of that involves, you know, sort of staying almost perfectly still,
Oh, yeah.
I imagine you've probably seen just about everything that, you know, our wildlife has to offer. But have you ever had any encounters that maybe got a little too close for comfort?
I would tell you the fun thing that really got me nervous was a cow.
That's not what I was expecting you to say, but okay.
She had these big old horns, and she was the head cow in the herd. And she came in to inspect my camera. She actually had her horns around the camera.
Oh, wow.
And what do you do with a 2,000-pound cow? Now, I kind of know what to do with an alligator or snake, but what do you do with a big cow? And the other problem we've had, the most dangerous thing out there, I think, probably are hogs. Those are kind of scary. I think gators are just, they just don't. If you're walking slowly, you're not thrashing around, they just think you're a big tree. You know, I'm not sure they really think you're something to eat. If you start splashing around swimming, then they think you're a fish.
Right, right.
So I try not to be too noisy in the water.
Well, we do have our phone lines ringing up now with just a few minutes left, but let's go to the phones and talk to Michael in Fort Myers.
Howdy.
Michael, you're on Gulf Coast Live. Welcome.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to ask real quick, first of all, let me say it's an honor to speak with you, Mr. Butcher. You kind of inspired me to get into photography as well. I teach photography at FGCU, and I teach digital, but I wanted to know, you know, if you felt that there was a disconnect when you switched to digital versus, you know, your traditional format of film with the environment, as, you know, as being an environmental photographer, if you feel that it, you know, it feels too rushed versus, you know, when you're doing film, it's more labored and intensive. You know, have you ever experienced that disconnect?
No, I actually, after doing 50-some years with film, I've learned to be slow. If I have a really good day in digital, I might take 4 pictures. And sometimes I wait. I did just one shot in Myakka. I was back to the same spot 7 times before I got it in digital. So it's basically the same thing. It's just a lot of people are switching from digital to film to learn how to slow down. And that's
right,
important.
Right, right, exactly.
People just don't, you know, you click, well, I'm shooting at a 30th of a second instead of 2 minutes, so obviously there's a lot more.
Right.
I can do more things. But the whole key is to enjoy yourself, and people they rely on the picture as a remembrance and not the experience. So when you're there two or 3 hours waiting for the light, you start feeling the environment, you start feeling the bugs, you're feeling the sun, you're feeling the rain, so you become more one with it. But if you just shoot and run, that's a lot, you know, tourists do. They just say, oh, I got that picture, now I go to the next thing. You know, it's like...
Right, great.
Yeah, so...
Thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks so much for the call, Michael. We are about out of time for this segment, but before we go, let's take one more call from Terry in Naples. Terry, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. What's up?
Good. I do have a little question, and I'll be brief. And as much time as Clyde has to. Hi, Clyde.
Hi.
Terry Legree originally was friends with Oscar Thompson, one of my most special friends, and he introduced me to you and Nikki. I've taken classes from both of you, Nikki, and the painting that you mentioned earlier. My question is something that that people really don't know about, I think, and that is how special the place is down near the Everglades that you purchased with that was originally, I believe, a farm for wild orchids. And
correct.
I was wondering if you might share some information.
Oh, our gallery is located actually in the very center of the Everglades. And we consider Big Cypress part of the Everglades. It's even talk to the rangers, it's one of the most magical places in the Everglades. It hasn't been really touched by people. You just can't comprehend it until you get into it. I mean, When we first bought the property, my wife was walking around the property saying, oh, how great it is, how pretty it is, you know. And I said, no, you got to get out in the back of the swamp. It's really pretty back here. And as you get further and further and deeper, it's a magic place.
Yes.
And Oscar Thompson was my mentor. Oscar probably was responsible for me doing what I'm doing. I felt comfortable with him, being out there with him, since he was a gator poacher in his younger days. And
yes.
I felt he could take care of the gators if I have a problem. But he taught me where the gators
yes.
eat. So if you don't go where the gators eat, you probably won't have a gator. Or you know where the snakes are,
yes.
you shouldn't have a problem with the snakes.
All right. Well, Terry, thank you so much for your call and question as
thank
well.
Thank you. Yes. And I wish you the best in your recovery, Clyde, and the best.
Well, we're trying.
Well.
All right.
Okay, hang in there.
Well, that is unfortunately all the time we have for this portion of the program. But thanks so much to our guest, Clyde Butcher. Always great to speak with you.
I appreciate the time. And everybody come to the Swamp Walk. It's going to be next weekend.
That's right, next weekend at the Everglades Gallery. Well, we're transitioning now from black and white photography to the vibrant colors in the expressionist paintings of Southwest Florida's own Leoma Lovegrove. She joins us in studio just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live on WGCU.